This is episode 202 of the Photo Biz Exposed podcast, and today's special guest is Boudoir photographer. That's right, Boudoir, not Boudoir, Jen Swedeen. And I think you'll notice in this interview, I was surprised by a few things about Jen's business, happily surprised, and I think there's a ton to learn from what she's doing. That interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the Photo Biz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. You may have noticed in the early intro there's some strange or different background noises to usual. It's because I'm recording this intro and outro and other parts of the show at Sydney Airport today. I've just arrived back from Bali. I've had 10 days over there with the family. It's been fantastic. Even learned a couple of business lessons along the way, which I'm going to share with you in just a minute. But the reason I'm still here at the airport is because I'm transferring down to Adelaide today. I'm going down to see the Tour Down Under with a bunch of friends, take my bike down there, do a bit of riding each day so that the holidays continue, but the work doesn't stop. And speaking of Adelaide, I'm looking forward to catching up with any listeners that are based or will be in the area this week while the Tour Down Under's on. And I'll share more about that a little later in the show. While in Bali, I wasn't too focused on work, although I was answering emails and I was participating in the Facebook group for members, but it didn't mean I wasn't thinking about work and how some of the experiences that I was going through in Bali applied to my business and the way that I do things with Impact Images and my photography clients. And one thing really stood out, and that was while taking cab rides. We took quite a few cab rides, and some of them were only quite short, some were longer than others, but in each case, we built up some kind of rapport or built some kind of a relationship, maybe the start of a relationship, even if it was just chit-chat with the different drivers. And it was funny because there was one driver in particular we felt like there was an instant connection with. That's Linda and I when I say we. We got talking. It was very natural about his family, his lifestyle, where he lives, how old his kids are, where they go to school, how tough it is to make a living in Bali, how there's so many cabs and there's so much competition. Although he was, I guess, sharing a big part of his personal life with us, we felt connected to him. We had this, I guess, connection because of the similarity of our kids' ages, and he had two kids as well. And we understood, you know, that working for yourself and having your own business is tough, no matter which country you're in. Anyway, we get to the end of the ride, and it's pretty usual to tip in Bali above and beyond what the fare prices are. And Linda felt compelled to give this particular guy a really big tip, a lot bigger than we'd given any other taxi driver while we'd been there, and that we would go on to give other taxi drivers on that trip. And he was absolutely delighted. He was really rapt. We could see that it was unexpected. He was surprised and shocked and delighted. Thanks, Qantas. Yeah, so he was shocked and delighted and truly rapt and appreciative of the extra tip. And we could see that it was heartfelt and, it was touching. We felt really good about it too, which was really nice. I guess that's a nice part or byproduct of giving or being generous. And then in regards to other taxi rides that we had, one that we did yesterday actually really stood out as being the exact opposite. This particular driver, he started telling us about his family. And it was a similar kind of a story, but we just didn't connect with this guy. It sounded like it was made up. It sounded like he was trying to put on or give us a sob story so he would get a bigger tip. It didn't feel natural at all. It felt forced. As a result, he didn't get a big tip. It just didn't feel right from the start. And then we had a full range in between. But I guess what I took away and what Linda took away from that experience with that one particular driver who we did connect with is that it's stories and connections and authenticity that builds those connections that made us want to do business or to be supportive or generous with whatever we had toward him. And I think that is exactly the same with photography businesses and our websites and the way we make connections with our clients. You know, and this is what we have heard from so many guests who have their websites and particularly their about pages all sorted out. They find the clients, or they build a connection with their clients, their perfect clients, more quickly and more easily than someone who doesn't have a well thought out good about page that is authentic and true to themselves and shows who they are. And that might be showing weakness or vulnerability or some things that you may not feel comfortable sharing. I'm not saying or suggesting that you have to bare your soul on your about page, but I think the moral or the lesson from my experience in Bali is that if you can make a connection and share enough of yourself that the person you're trying to do business with, or that you're trying to attract to your business, has a connection with you because of what you're sharing, and they get involved in your story, they want to be part of your story, or they feel a part of it because of what you're sharing, then I think you're much likely to build a stronger rapport, to build a better client relationship with that person, and go on to have a great experience along the whole photographic journey, you know, from that first meeting right up until that sales session and when they pick up their album or their wall art or whatever it may be. Do you feel the same way? I mean, have you ever done business with someone where you felt this immediate connection and you were more than happy to give them money or to pay whatever they were asking because there was that connection? That's the way we felt. And I think the beauty of Bali for me and for Linda was that we saw the exact opposite as well. You know, it was 180 degree separation. It was the exact opposite. We felt like we were getting ripped off. We felt like this guy was trying to take us for a ride. It was just... totally embellishing his scenario. And you know what isn't so nice about the whole experience with that second, or the driver from yesterday, is that he may have been telling the truth, but the way he told it, we just didn't feel that connection. It just didn't come across that way. And that would be really disappointing to think that he wasn't actually trying to take advantage of us, but we just didn't have a connection. That would be sad. That's some food for thought about the way you're connecting with your clients on your website, on your about page. I know I'm going to give it some more thought, what I'm doing and how I make those connections with what I share. And maybe I need to open up a bit more, be a bit more vulnerable and share a little bit more about my dreams, my passions, my history, you know, what I'm trying to achieve, all those things. Just be more open. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Have you experienced something similar? Let me know in the comments area, or let's chat on Facebook inside the members group if you're a premium member. But get involved in the conversation, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode, I interviewed John Laurent Gordy. And on the topic of authenticity, this is a guy, if you haven't heard that interview, that is living an authentic life. We talked about marketing, his business and networking, and I kept trying to bring in strategy, you know, the topic of strategy. What is he doing strategically to improve his business? And it was almost to the point where he was getting annoyed because I could see and sense and feel that there was not really a business strategy to his approach. It was just being authentic, reaching out, making connections with other photographers in the area that he wanted to move to and around the world for that matter. Jean Laurent wasn't doing it in a way to build his business. He was just looking to build genuine relationships with fellow photographers that he admired and respected. And in turn, they ended up helping him tremendously with his business. I think that interview, that podcast episode, will tie in perfectly with some of the things that I talked about earlier in this show and being authentic and sharing your vision, what you want to achieve, your approach, and what you're looking to deliver to your clients with your photography. Definitely get back and have a listen to that episode with Jean Laurent Gordy. If you haven't had a chance, it's a great story, and you'll get a better idea of how he's building such a great business in a brand new country.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is not boudoir photographer, but boudoir photographer, Jen Swedeen. Jen has been shooting general portraits for over 7 years, and she made the leap to focus on men's portraiture in 2015. Not only did she change her business and her creative focus to men, she moved to a new city and is now based in Denver, Colorado in the USA. Most of her work appears to be studio-based, but she does offer location shoots to her clients. And in addition to her photography business, Jen has a second string in her income-earning bow as a virtual assistant and professional retoucher for boudoir photographers. She's married with three children, sports some cool-looking and colourful tattoos, and sounds like she's a lot of fun to be around. Jen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've got to describe where you are at the moment for the listener.
Where I am physically?
Yeah, what can you see? What, yeah, who's in the room with you or what's in the room with you right now?
Oh, okay. So I'm in my home office, which is I share with my husband, who's part of my business. And we also share it with our fish tank and our chameleon and our two tree frogs.
So it's a busy little room.
It's a very colorful room, yes.
Maybe we can start by you telling the listener and I about your business, you know, and why the change to focus on men's portraiture.
Yeah, so I shot boudoir for several years and I really enjoyed it, but it became to be kind of a heavy process for me because women, they tell you everything. They tell you all of their life situation, and I was internalizing that and taking it home with me and letting it stew, and it just became too heavy. And I was hired by a man one day to shoot some kind of sexy portraits for a new dating website, and I just fell in love with it. It was a totally different thing, 100% different than shooting women. So the challenge was really fun and interesting, and I do really well with men. I've always gotten along really well with men. I can relate to them pretty easily, and so the switch was pretty natural for me, just in terms of personality, because I'm not high maintenance. I'm really mostly just a guy in a woman's body.
How long after that initial shoot with that guy did you think, okay, I'm going to make the switch?
About a year. I did a little practicing and I shot a few different guys just to try it out and, you know, see if I liked it and to see if there was actually a market for it. And then when I moved to Denver about a year and a half later, there's a great market for it here. And I figured I'm going to completely cut out my client base anyways. I might as well completely start over.
So that's what you did. You made the change to the transition to men and moved at the same time.
Yes.
I imagine it was going to be scary to do that. But did you have like a backup? Did you have another income stream? Did you already have the other work that you do on the side? Were you relying on your husband's income?
So I knew I was going to go from my regular income to nothing pretty much overnight. So that's when I started my second business, doing the retouching and the assistant work, just to kind of fill in the gaps. And then luckily that took off very quickly, much more quickly than I expected it to. So I was able to kind of bridge the gap and I could focus on photography the way I wanted to without having to worry about the income portion so much because I had the second business to fall back on. So I was able to transition into a new business model completely on my terms without feeling like I needed to compromise or shoot things I didn't want to shoot or offer discounts and that sort of thing. I really had the chance to experiment with this totally new niche that there isn't really a carved out plan that I can like borrow from someone else. I kind of making up my own stuff as I go.
Mm-hmm, for sure. If you were to take a snapshot of your business right now, which is the better performing business? Which one is making more profit?
The retouching for sure, because there's a big need for it in our market. And there's so much need for it that I can definitely turn clients away all the time. Sometimes I don't have the time to work on the photography like I would like to, which is okay because I'm building it slowly the way it needs to be built instead of kind of just jamming it all together. I think in the new year, it'll kind of transition out and be a little bit easier so I can balance them both. But it's been good because marketing to a niche that doesn't exist just really takes a lot of time to even establish that what I do is a real thing.
For sure. Yeah, look, I want to dive into that marketing and what you did to sort of start building the business on the boudoir side. But just when you're looking at the both the separate businesses and you're saying that the retouching is performing better if you're looking at profit, did you ever think, well, let's leave the photography just as a fun thing and I'll concentrate on the retouching business only?
Yeah, a little bit. Photography is something I really love to do, but I don't feel like it's something I have to do. But retouching is the same way. I'm pretty good at it, but like, does it fuel me on the inside? Not really. So we grew fast enough that my husband was able to quit his job and come work for me full time. So that's been really interesting transition. So there's definitely been times when I thought, you know, I'll just do it for fun. But I also see the potential there with really no one else shooting what I do. No one else really specializes in what I do. And it's really fun. It's a really fun thing to shoot.
So the business must be great if your husband left his job and he's working with you in the business. So what's his role in the business?
He's a full-time retoucher as well. And he does a little bit of like business management for me in terms of like a kind of like an office manager sort of thing. But mostly what he does is retouching. That's a lot of what I do now. We're both working very full-time retouching, mostly for boudoir clients.
Okay, wow. So is there other people in the business or is it just the two of you?
It's the two of us. And then we have a small team of contract retouchers that we use if we have overflow or we have special work that needs a special skill. So we've had a bigger team and a smaller team throughout the years. I'm trying to figure out the right business model. But right now it's mostly us, so we can keep it in-house and then two or three people that we outsource to and hire as we need to.
Okay, cool. Are those people that you outsource to, are they based in the US or are they overseas workers?
Both. There's some in the US, there's some overseas too. They're all photographers as well.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're not going to, say, you know, a site like Upwork and finding contractors from, let's say, third world countries to do the work?
Nope. Nope. They're all small business owners just like me that need a little extra revenue stream, or in their slow period, they can take on a little extra work.
Okay. And do you train them to retouch the way you want them to?
I do. Yeah. We work together on just building their skills and then how to match a client edits and stuff like that. And then any work that they do comes back through me. So I go through everything and can ensure that it looks the same as if I did it myself, and, you know, everything gets quality controlled and funneled.
Fantastic. Okay. Very cool. All right. Let's switch back to the photography. So where were you based before you moved to Denver?
I was in a town here in Colorado, a small town called Grand Junction. It's a smaller city, population of about 75,000 if you include like all of the little surrounding towns.
Okay. When do you know that you're going to be moving to Denver? And then what do you do marketing-wise to start trying to attract some kind of work when you get there?
So I started with, I got a studio space in Denver about a year before I moved. It was a co-op space, so my rent was pretty low and it was pretty flexible shooting-wise. So when I did book anything in Denver, I could just go travel the 4 hours and shoot there. So that really helped to have a home base ahead of time. And I really started with finding a couple of models, male models, shooting them for the experience, and then kind of branching out through their network. So their friends saw their images, and, you know, it was as I built a portfolio and a network all together.
Okay. When did you start putting things online saying that, you know, you were Denver based? How far or how long before you actually got to Denver did you do that?
About a year, probably.
Okay. So a year out, people knew that you, or they thought you were a Denver based boudoir photographer or boudoir photographer.
Yeah. I knew that I had a Denver option.
Okay, all right. And then what were you doing to attract work, or what are you doing now to attract, you know, the guys to come in for these shoots?
I am trying a little bit of everything. That is still to be decided because this is such a fresh, new market. I do as much SEO work as I can, but it's not something that people are really searching because it's not something that people are really accustomed to getting. So SEO is helpful. Word of mouth is where I'm getting most of it. So social media, sharing and tagging, and then friends saying, it was really fun, you should totally try this. Or a past client will tell me, oh, I have this friend that's really good looking, you should shoot him, that sort of thing.
Okay. Who is the normal client for you? Because when I look at your website, the guys all look like models. They've all got six packs. They look awesome. They've got these strong jawlines, these piercing stares. I mean, is that the client you're going after for every shoot?
No, not for every shoot, but that seems to be the type that is for now more willing to come in and be vulnerable and bear it. I'm starting to see a bit of a shift into more of the everyday man instead of these guys that really put a lot of attention into their physique. most of the men on my site are not models. They just happen to be gorgeous.
Tough job, hey? Tough job.
Oh, it's the worst, yeah. But I am starting to see a shift of just regular dudes wanting to come and have the experience and try something new. So I don't really have an ideal. I market to everyone, and it's as hard for men to come in and be vulnerable and intimate with their bodies as it is for women, and sometimes harder. So it can take a lot more convincing for just the average guy.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So what about these guys with these amazing physiques? Are they comfortable as soon as they come in?
No, nope. It's very hard to make them comfortable. Some of them are, and some of them are not. It depends on them. But the society's view of men's bodies is pretty cut and dry. Like, to be physically sexy, you're supposed to have the six pack and be really, you know, cut and lean and all of that. Whereas women, our standards, we have really unrealistic standards, but they're a lot more fluid and flexible than for men. A plus size woman can be really gorgeous. A plus size man doesn't have that same flexibility all the time. So a lot of them, even when they work out 6 days a week and come in just in perfect condition and totally gorgeous, they don't know that they are, you know, far above average. They have the same insecurities as anyone else.
Wow. That amazes me to hear that when I look at the guys on your website. I mean, you think those guys would be walking around super confident. You know, I picture these guys spending a lot of time in the gym looking in the mirror anyway and knowing what looks good and what doesn't.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like that's the case.
No, and that's something that really surprised me at first too, is that you expect women to be hard on themselves when you shoot their boudoir, and you expect them to be a little nitpicky on their body and their beauty and stuff like that. I didn't expect the same with men, but it's definitely as hard or harder on men. They have very cut and dry ideals of what they should look like, how their muscles should be, how their jawline should be, you know, their hairline. It's not any different for men than women, except there is the double edge of women know that they can be picky, and we don't really judge them for that. Men aren't supposed to be picky, yet they are. So it's this kind of balancing act of finding a comfortable middle ground.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any third party or alliances or partnerships with, you know, places like gyms or sporting shops? I'm just trying to think of where your ideal client would be hanging out and if you have any relationships with those business owners.
I don't yet. That's something that I'm planning to work on in the new year, getting maybe some people that compete in physique competitions and things like that. So that's a plan that I have for next year for sure.
Okay. So really it's social media and word of mouth that's bringing in the clients.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, cool. When you talked about the insecurities of the guys, is a sales session with a guy different to a woman?
Yes, it is. So for boudoir, typically it's an in-person sale and you show them either a slideshow or, you know, set to music, that sort of thing. And you really pump up like how gorgeous they are and the intimate connection and stuff like that. And then you go through image by image and let them say yes or no and pick their favorites, that sort of thing. It makes men really uncomfortable to do that in front of me. So for them to say yes to any is kind of tricky because society says men shouldn't like photos of themselves. And then to say no is equally tricky because society says you shouldn't care what you look like. So I have found that there's a lot of discomfort in an in-person sales session where they actually have to go through and choose images. And especially if I ask them why they do or don't like something, it's kind of an emotionally challenging thing for them to do.
Okay. So do you have them come in on their own or with someone else to help choose like a girlfriend or a wife or boyfriend?
Yeah, I've been giving them the option of coming in with me or doing it online and just doing an online gallery and, you know, give them very specific timeline and parameters. And some choose in person and can kind of push through it and get it done. And some of them do bring a friend then, like a friend or a partner or something like that. And some of them just prefer online. And it seems to be much easier for them. And it seems like looking at an online gallery for a man is much easier than a woman. They're much more decisive and less likely to narrow it down to nothing, whereas a woman online could narrow it down to one image after nitpicking.
Right, okay. Which way gets you the better sale at the end of the day, the online or the in-person sales session? with the men?
It's kind of a toss-up at this point. It depends on if it's just the man or if he was part of a couple or if he brings someone. There isn't really a one way or the other.
All right. So what do you prefer?
I prefer in person because I like to hang out with them and it gives me the extra time to kind of boost confidence and, you know, make that connection. But I'm not going to lie, I like online too because it saves me a lot of time.
Well, if they're both producing equal results, then yeah, online would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. What are the guys buying after a session in a sale?
Mostly digitals.
Really? Okay. So you offer prints and all kinds of products, don't you, really?
I do. I have a pretty simple price list. I do digital images, metal wall art, and then a couple of little side options. So I do sell some wall art because they're cool, but that's mostly for couples. It's the same thing. It's hard for a man to justify buying a large print of himself to put on the wall. So digital seem to be the more common option.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. It's funny, isn't it? Because as a guy, I would find it very strange to go in and buy a large photo of myself.
Even though it's, you know, it's crazy and sexy and your body looks incredible, like, you just feel like an egomaniac putting something like that on your wall.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but you know what? I'm looking at your pricing page right now. And if a listener wants to check this out, it's jenswedenphotography.com. So JenSwedenPhotography.com. And I'm looking at your pricing page then. I've got, you know, the guy there with his hand on his chin. That's a cool shot. Like, that's something I could see hanging on a wall without being too over the top. So is that the sort of thing that a client would buy or not?
Yes. Yeah. If they're going to buy wall art, it's going to be more anonymous shots. Bodyscapes, stuff like that. Like the photo that's on there of, it's kind of a downward black and white shot of abs, that sort of stuff where it's not so direct eye contact and in your face sexy.
Okay. When you're shooting, then are you shooting these details on purpose for the sales session?
Yes, definitely.
Very cool. All right. And yeah, you're also doing couples, aren't you?
I do, yeah. I like shooting couples a lot. It's very fun.
Okay, how does that go sales-wise compared to, say, just shooting the guys?
Oh, way better.
Okay. Way better. See, now you've got me wondering. So I'm thinking business-wise, if that's way better, why focus on men?
Because it's so much more fun.
See, you're totally fighting against the current and you just want to shoot what you want to shoot.
Oh, yeah, I don't like to be told what to do. Like, money is not going to tell me what to do. No, I like what I like.
Okay, can I ask a brutal question here?
Yeah.
Are you making any money from shooting guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you us?
Yeah, it's profitable. I make more shooting couples because I think a lot of people make more when they shoot couples, whether they shoot boudoir or not, because then you've got two people buying into the sale and you've got him buying her images and her buying his images. And I also can maximize the shoot because I shoot basically three mini sessions in there, her alone, him alone, and them together. So there's a lot to pull from for the sales session. So I make more on those, and they're also more prone to buy wall art instead of digitals. But the way my pricing is structured, I do pretty well on just men. I mean, they've got a pretty clear minimum for what they get, and so it's a different thing. It's weird, but it's really fun. I like doing it.
Look, you know what? Please don't take it the wrong way. I'm not judging you. I think you are an amazing woman too. I mean, you're doing what we hear we should be doing, but everyone's too scared to do. I mean, you know you're making more money from, you know, doing your retouching and shooting couples, but you want to shoot men, so you're shooting men. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I've got actually quite a lot of kickback from fellow photographers for this because it is very weird and they think like, well, you should just do this or you'll never make it. You should adjust it and shoot this style. And I don't care. I'm an entrepreneur. I'd rather work 80 hours a week to avoid working 40 for someone else. And I would rather make money on my terms than, you know, make money on something that like kind of makes me groan when I have to do it. So I do still offer women if they contact me, but it's definitely not my focus. I don't market for women. I don't promote it at all. But if I get inquiries for it, I do take it.
Okay. That was really going to be my next question because I can see that the focus and the passion is with photographing men. It looks like you still do shoot some couples. You do shoot some women. Is that a financial decision? Is that why you're continuing to photograph those, you know, the things that you don't necessarily want to focus on?
Yeah, for now. In the new year, when I have a little bit more time to really build it the way that I want to and put a little bit more hard dollars into marketing, I'll probably cut away women altogether. But I do still have a client base from when I shot women. You know, I do still have a network for it. So I hate to completely take it away and shut that door because it is such a specialized, super tiny micro niche. It's a tough call. I think that that's the direction I'm going. So I take it when it comes to me, but it's not something that I'm seeking.
Okay. Where do you see your business in a couple of years' time when you talk about putting some money, some real money into the marketing?
So I'm hoping to kind of split it in half. Half would be shooting men just the way I'm doing now for portraits for individual clients. And then the other half would be into image licensing for like novel covers and that sort of thing. Because there's a definite market there already in place for like authors that write romance novels and need a specific look or, you know, need a sexy man on the cover. So that's my plan for next year, is to kind of start to tap into that market so I can do a divergence and offer both.
Okay. So you already got some information on your website about licensing, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Is that a figure that, because you got some prices on there, I think, was it $500?
Mm-hmm.
So was that a figure you just came up with, or, you know, where did you find out that was what you should be charging for licensing?
I came up with that through some market analysis, looking at some other photographers that offer the same sort of licensing things, and then just kind of working in my own cost of business and things like that.
Well, let me understand. So with licensing, do you basically put up a gallery online, let people know that you're there and you exist, or do you have to submit photos to an image library for them to market your work?
No, from what I can tell, I've only scratched the surface of this romance cover licensing situation. There's a lot of authors, they have their own sort of like conventions and things like that. Most of them hire the photographer directly. So the options are they either hire the photographer and the model all kind of independently and work together, or they go out of a library of images that you have available for licensing.
Okay. If you license an image to someone, say to an author, they don't own the copyright. You're just licensing them for the usage of the photo for that cover. Is that the way it works?
Correct.
Okay. And does that mean with your licensing that no one else can use that image for anything else?
Correct.
And what about the client?
They would be the client then.
Okay, what about the model?
Yeah, so the model would get paid a model fee for each image licensed. So any image that gets licensed out, they would have a flat rate that we would agree upon ahead of time.
Okay, and what if an author wants a photo that you've already, you know, from one of your clients that you've photographed, and you've made a sale, they're happy with their photos, and now someone wants to use one of their photos for a cover of a book?
Well, I would probably just contact the client and talk to them, see what they think about it. Likely what would happen is we would recreate the shoot with either the client, if they're willing to be a model, or an actual model that can emulate the look.
Right. Okay, cool. You mentioned a little while ago that the way you've structured your price list, you know, the sales are good, you know, and they're doing well. Can you just talk us through your pricing and how it works and why it's working for you?
Like I said, I don't like to be told what to do. And so I assume that my clients don't like to be told what to do either. So that's why I structure the pricing this way, so they can really be in control of what they want. And because just shooting men is still a new thing, I'm still figuring out what makes sense to them and what works for them. And this structure seems to be what is the most comfortable for them, a lower session fee and then completely a la carte products. Typically, they're going to want to do digitals. So then they can just pick how many they want and go from there. I like to keep it really simple and on their terms.
Okay. So the session fee is $175 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then where do you upload the photos to, and how many photos are you uploading for them to choose from?
Typically around 50. It depends on the client. If it's a client that's very self-conscious and I know is going to be kind of picky on themselves, I'll edit them ahead of time. If it's not someone like that, I won't, and they get to see the just like a lightly processed. Can you hear that?
The chirping?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. It's my end, isn't it? It's birds outside my window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just making sure my computer hasn't lost its mind.
No. It's birds just outside my window.
Okay. So if it's a client that's going to be really hard on themselves, I'll do a retouch ahead of time and they'll get to choose from their retouched images. If it's someone that won't be particularly hard on themselves or doesn't have much to retouch, then I'll just do a light process and let them choose from those. And it depends on the session. A typical session, they're going to get to choose from about 50 or 60 images.
Okay. And are you uploading them to a private gallery or are they there for anyone to see?
Yeah, they're a private gallery.
Using what kind of software?
Shootproof.
Okay. So they go on there, they have a copy of your price list and they can select the photos that they want to purchase or they can buy all the digitals together in one package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly it's piece by piece. They can buy them all if they want, but it's typically they just narrow it down to their favorite 15 or whatever.
Okay. And is there any incentive then for them to buy more?
Yeah, the prices are per image. So once you get above 9 images, the price goes down a little bit. And then if you get them all, the price goes down per image even lower. There's a 4 image minimum. So they have to meet my minimum at least.
Okay. And so per image, how much are we talking?
$125.
Okay. So minimum 4. So they've paid their $175 session fee. They've got to buy a minimum 4. So spend 5. So they're spending $675 minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Cool. And how long is a shoot usually?
About an hour, hour and a half maybe. I'm a pretty quick shooter. I don't really mess around. I don't overshoot. But we do goof off quite a bit. So between an hour and hour and a half.
Okay. And with boudoir, I know the makeup and the hair is a big part of it and even clothing as well. What about with guys? Is there much difference there?
Yes, it's much easier. I do give them the option of hiring a makeup artist, but they never do that. So I give them a prep guide ahead of time, just telling them how to arrive, how to style themselves, grooming tips, that sort of thing. And it also gives them a guideline on what to bring, what sort of outfits work and what doesn't work. And typically, we keep it pretty simple. It's not like women that have their costumes and their lingerie and all the stuff. Men generally look sexiest with well-fitted jeans and a shirt.
Okay, so it's pretty simple.
It's much more simple. I can get a lot of variety from very little.
Okay, and what about enhancing abs? Because I imagine most guys are going to want that. Is there any tricks to do that?
Yes, I do dodge and burn for that.
Okay, so no makeup. It's all post.
It's all post. Yeah, so the prep guide gives them a kind of a step-by-step guide to preparing their body ahead of time. So how to kind of cut down their water and to help them get definition for the day of. And then in studio, while I'm setting up, I usually recommend that they do some jumping jacks or some push-ups or some crunches or something like that just to get the muscles kind of popping and the blood flowing and, you know, get them feeling a little bit more fit. So, and then I light specifically for muscle definition. And then if it needs any enhancement in post, it's just a really quick and easy dodge and burn.
Yeah, right. Okay. Are they seeing any of the images as you shoot? Like, are you shooting tethered or showing them any images on the back of your camera?
Sometimes I show them. That depends on the client. Sometimes it freaks them out more than helps them. So it depends. Not everyone can handle seeing themselves. Sometimes it makes them more comfortable. Sometimes it makes them feel fat.
Yeah, okay. Really feel fat. Look at these guys.
I know.
It sounds like the shoots would be fun. They really do. And it sounds like you make it fun. And it sounds like you would make it easy for them to buy as well. I can totally understand why a guy would find it easy to buy online and pick and choose that way and not be as critical as women on themselves at the same time.
Right. The shoot is really, it seems like it would be sexy, just like shooting a couple seems like it would be sexy. And it's not. It's really silly and it's not a sexual environment. It's really goofy. We giggle a lot and we make fun of each other a lot. And I'm really kind of a derp in person. And so they get plenty of opportunity to laugh at me. So the images end up being really sexy and intimate feeling, but it's not like that in person. It's far more clinical. And that's the scariest part for them, I think, is I don't know how to be sexy. Will you tell me what to do? And it's not sexy. You don't have to come in and be sexy.
It's funny because all the photos on your website, they look sexy. So it's hard to imagine you joking around and getting these shots because the guys look, they look serious in most of the photos.
Yeah, no, it's not.
They must be blown away and shocked when they see the image gallery for the first time, I'm sure.
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, yeah. And some of them are kind of serious because, you know, men are serious creatures sometimes. But I try to take away all of any of that tension that could be there and just make it a unique experience and something that they can go home and tell their friends, like, yeah, it wasn't weird at all. It was pretty fun. I mean, there's weird stuff. Like, I have to rub baby oil on you now. So sorry about that.
So, yeah, that must be tough, Jen.
I know. But, you know, I'm willing to take this job.
Can we switch subjects and businesses and talk a little bit about your retouching business?
Yes.
You gave me the impression when you talked about that earlier that that just, it took off like quicker than what you expected it to, and it's continued to grow. Is that the case?
Yes, it took off very quickly. I started more as a virtual assistant doing things like building websites and SEO work and, you know, just the crap that people don't want to do. And it kind of, over the last year, morphed more into retouching for boudoir photographers because they're aren't a lot of specialists for boudoir, and boudoir retouching is different than anything else. So that has taken off a lot.
First of all, how did you get into the general VA type work? How did people know that you were there to do that? How did you market yourself to photographers for them to find you?
I didn't really need to do anything. I mean, I'm a photographer, so I'm kind of integrated into the community already. So once I got a website up, I just said, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. And they came. There was very clearly a hole that needed to be filled. And so it didn't take any marketing. I have not put any effort into this business outside of the actual work.
And when you say you're part of, integrated in the community, on Facebook groups, on forums?
Yeah, mostly just Facebook groups that I'm in, you know, friends that I already know. I have a Facebook page that I haven't ever updated. So it was just ripe for the picking, honestly. There was a very clear need. And a lot of people find me online just searching for, I'm a photographer and I need an assistant, because there's also not a lot of virtual assistants specifically for photographers because we have very unique needs in our business. So having a knowledge set and being a trusted figure that works really hard, it all fell into place. It took off very, very quickly. I was not prepared for the growth.
So are most of your clients local photographers to you, or where are they based?
They're based all over. I think I only have one that's local to me, maybe two, but they're all over the country. I've got some international, not a ton because the US dollar kind of screws them on the back end. So they're all over.
Mostly.
Yeah, I do some work for like wedding photographers and some portrait photographers that have found me online, but it's probably 90% boudoir photographers.
Okay. Have you got a separate website for this, or is this all part of Jen Swine? And
I do have a separate website, yes.
Okay, what's that one?
It's jengetsshitdone.com.
I'm going to just go there while we're talking. jengetsshitdone.com.
Yes.
Okay. How did you make the decision to go just to retouching? Was that something that just attracted you to that side of the business?
No, it's just that's what the most demand was for. I still offer the virtual assistant stuff just on a smaller scale. And I take it on here and there, but the retouching it's kind of more fun because it's versatile and I get a lot of different stuff in. And I really feel like the retouching is helping my clients. They all see growth in their business. Getting out, like just outsourcing in general helps people so much. But then getting a really solid retouch that's super consistent, their sales go up. But then it also, I'm retouching boudoir, it also helps their clients that they have a great finished image. So I really feel like I'm helping people. I'm doing good for the photography community.
Yeah, right. Do you feel like you're in a position, if you wanted to grow this business, this could take over what you're doing?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you're limiting the amount of clients that you're taking on. It's that good.
Yes.
Okay. What if another photographer that was listening thought, okay, this sounds interesting. I want to give this a go. I want to help other photographers and create some extra income. What would you suggest they do to get started?
I would suggest it's hard. It's a hard business. So do some research and really decide if you can meet tight deadlines, if you can be very consistent, and if you can always put another photographer's need above yours. Because the hardest thing as a photographer is setting aside my own preferences. I like my things edited a certain way, but I have to edit their certain way. So that's a really hard transition for a lot of people. I've hired a lot of retouching contractors and had to fire a lot of retouching contractors for that reason, because they just could not put their own preferences aside and work for someone else.
Okay. So it sounds like you put together a pretty intense questionnaire to find out what a client likes, or you must get copies of their photos. Like, how do you work out exactly what your client wants?
Yeah, we do a test run. They send me before and afters. At this point, there's a pretty clear standard. So I can usually nail their style within the first three images. Otherwise, it's just kind of growing pains, them telling me, you always take this out, please, or always leave this in, please. And from there, it's pretty easy to match.
Okay. And it looks like when I look at your website there, you're doing things like liquify and, you know, skin softening. You're doing a lot to each image.
Yes.
So that means you must need the raw file. You're not just working off, what's it called?
The JPEG?
No, not the JPEG. You know, if someone's shooting raw, I shoot JPEG, so I'm might get mixed up with my terminology here. But if I send my files to another image editor, usually they'll just take, is it the preview file?
Oh, yeah. They send me the hard copy.
Okay. So how do they do that? They must be sending you like gigabytes.
Yeah. I have a private cloud folder. I have a cloud drive that I use. And so they get private access, and then they send me their stuff and I send it back the exact.
What do you mean by private cloud drive?
It's from WD, from Western Drive. The same people that makes your external hard drives, you can get a personal cloud. So that's what I use. I just have it set up so I create a private shared folder for them on my self-hosted cloud. So it's more secure because then we're not going through Dropbox or WeTransfer, things like that. And it's really easy for them to send it to me, me to send it right back.
Okay. But so still, they have to have a pretty good internet connection to be uploading gigabytes, don't they, to do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then you bring it down. So are you mainly working in Photoshop or in Lightroom?
Mostly Photoshop. Some people have me do their raw processing and culling and things like that. So for that, I use Lightroom. But the actual retouching work is Photoshop.
Right. Okay. Would you suggest someone takes this on as extra work?
I think there is a lot of potential. I think there's a lot of clients to go around. But at the same time, photographers are notoriously cheap and very picky. So you have to have a pretty tough skin and you have to be very customer service oriented to be sure that you're meeting their standards, charging something that makes sense for you. You have to make a living, but it still makes sense to them. So I charge upwards of $3 an image. And that can get really expensive really fast.
For your client?
Yes. If I'm charging $3 an image, they have to be perfect and amazing.
Okay. So there's a lot of pressure on you to get it right.
Yeah. And I have to meet deadlines because a lot of times the deadline that I'm getting their images back, they are doing their in-person sales that day. So I can't miss deadlines. Even if I get sick, we got to figure it out because their deadline, it's not just affecting me, it's also affecting my client and their client. So it's all of our monies that are tied up.
Okay. How do you decide which jobs you do and which ones get outsourced?
Well, I keep most things in-house now. So I split it between me and my husband. Our editing is the same, so you can't tell the difference between who does what. So that's nice. Some of my clients are paired off with a retoucher. So if they prefer a very heavy hand, I have a retoucher that has a very heavy hand. So I just kind of automatically send those files between them. So it's kind of a as needed. based on style.
Okay, cool. Thanks for sharing all that stuff. Before we finish off, I want to get to these 10 quick questions with you, but you're pretty prolific on YouTube as well, and you're teaching a lot of the stuff that you're doing. Why do you do that?
Oh, because I feel like rising tides is a real thing. I didn't make any of this stuff up. None of it's really proprietary to me. And I remember when I was learning how hard it was to find the resources and how hard it was to get a mentor to respond to me or actually listen to me or treat me with respect. So I feel like if I can be a resource and people get better, I can charge more if they're better. I mean, rising tides raise us all up. So that's why I'm an open book. I like to share.
Okay, I get that. That is lovely what you say there. And I agree with what you're saying. But is there a business reason for hosting these YouTube tutorials on your website?
No, you know, those I actually just kind of started because it was, I knew something and I wanted to share that knowledge. And so I did some YouTube videos and then all of a sudden a couple of them really blew up huge and have like a ton of views on them. And I got a bunch of subscribers. And so I have them on my website just as like a, hey, here's some resources. But that's not really something I put a whole lot of effort or work into. It's just something I do. I also contribute to a couple of forums and organization blogs and stuff. And yeah, but no real business reason. Just I find that it's good to share.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do your clients, the males and the females, do they actually comment or do they ever comment on the videos, tutorials in here?
No.
Never. Okay. I visit this and maybe it's because I'm a photographer, but if I was coming to you for a shoot and I saw you had a tab called photographers, I would click on it and I'd see all these tutorials and I'd think, this chick knows what she's doing. Like, look, This is great. She's teaching other photographers. That's what I'd be thinking if I was a client. So I was just curious if you actually had that comment, but you never have.
No, not really. Sometimes they'll see it. So I randomly had someone the other day message me and say, hey, I was Googling how to do this and your thing came up. But they just thought it was like, you know, so crazy that the first Google result was someone they actually knew. So sometimes people see this stuff, but I haven't heard much from them about it.
Okay, cool. So mainly it really is there for photographers and to help other photographers.
Yep.
Cool. Are you ready for these 10 quick questions?
Yes.
All right.
10 quick questions, 10 quick answers. 3, 2, 1, go.
What camera system are you using?
I use a Sony A99.
Wow, I think you are the first photographer that I've interviewed that said that camera. So why that camera system?
Oh, so I shot Canon for a long time and it always gave me a hard time and annoyed me. So I started looking into alternate options and Sony seemed like the best non-mainstream, and I've had this camera for like 5 years now, really long time. No problems, no glitches, nothing. And I was having every year a new problem with my Canon. So it's been great. The color is perfect. The sharpness is perfect. It's just, I love Sony. It's so great.
Nice. Okay, what's your favorite lens and why?
I love the 85, like the fall off and the focal point. I use my 50 a lot too.
The Sony's a full frame, isn't it? So your 85 in a Sony is an 85.
Yes.
Okay, cool. What's the favorite piece of software that you use in your business?
Oh, well, Photoshop is where I live.
Do you actually use any software for your business to manage, you know, your marketing and your talking to clients, email, bookings?
Yeah, so that is something that I spend a whole lot of time researching. And I feel that there's a very strong need for that none of the programs out there actually need. So for photography, I'm with 17 Hats and it's okay. I don't love it. There's nothing that really pumps me up. The other things that I use are Jotform and Asana. That's how I manage my workflow for retouching. And then I have a Zap created, so it's automated.
Just talk me through what you just said then, because I'm not familiar with Asana and I don't use Jotforms.
Oh my.
And you just said you've got automation. So what was all that?
Yes. Okay, so Jotform is just an online form for people, like mock form or anything like that. You can have them fill out for leads or questionnaires or anything like that. And then the in-between step is Zapier, Zapier. And that's just this really wonderful online software that connects different apps, different softwares for you. So it's called a Zap. So someone fills out my form and then a Zap is created. So it automatically takes that information and dumps it into Asana, which is a task management system. So as soon as someone fills out this questionnaire about what images they want retouched, it automatically creates a job for me in Asana. And then Asana has the deadline and if I assign it to someone else and all the notes. And it's just a big task management thing. And all of those are free.
Oh, they're all free. Really? That's a bonus. Are you using JotForm for your photography clients or for your outsourcing clients?
I use it for both.
Oh, right. Okay. So if I make an inquiry as a guy looking to have some photos done, I would be sent a Jot form, would I?
No, that is through 17 Hats.
Okay. All right. So the Jot form is more for photographers looking to use you to help with their outsourcing.
Yeah. I use the Jot form also for like people signing up for a workshop or, you know, if there's some sort of special thing I need, it's easier to do in Jot form than 17 Hats. So it kind of depends on the need.
Okay, I'll go and have a look. Sounds interesting. What's your current workflow? So you shoot, then what happens?
Oh, I got a big workflow.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I'm all about workflows. I spend a lot of time with people on their workflow trying to get them unstuck. So let's see. I shoot, I deal with the images, I sort them and either do a full edit or a soft edit. A lot of times I outsource my own photography retouching, because I think that that's a good practice for people to get into.
Why do you do that? You're a retoucher.
I know, because I'm a retoucher and it's two different things. And looking at your own work is really different than looking at someone else's work, because I remember the backstory of them. I've already been with them for so long. I see any mess ups that I made. All of that sort of stuff. The same reason it's good for photographers to outsource in general. I just kind of get it off my plate and clear up that space. So even though I'm very good and very fast, it still emotionally and mentally makes more sense for me to have someone else do it. And then when they come back, they're a clean image. And then I just apply my artistic work, you know, whatever toning and stuff like that. And then when I go into the sales session, they're really fresh and I'm really excited about them and I'm not tired of them.
Okay, that makes sense. So do you find that you spend longer on your own images than you would on someone else's?
Absolutely, and they annoy me.
I love that. Okay, so when you get back the clean image, then you'll bring it into something like Alien Skin or whatever, or add some presets?
Yes.
Okay, and get your look.
Yes. Then I schedule their sales session. If we do it in person or if we do it online, either way it's scheduled. Then we do that. Then I process their order, design if it needs to be designed, send it out for order if that needs to happen. The nice thing about sending out my retouching is they're ready to go. So if they order digitals, they're just like, boom, I'm done. And then I pass it on through the business management part of like, I pay the retoucher, I transfer the money for taxes, all that super boring stuff. I do the profit analysis and, you know, the gross stuff that we all have to do. And then I just prep them for blogging and social media. And if I remember to do that, I do that. I probably won't, but, you know.
So you're not blogging every shoot?
I should be.
But?
but I forget. You know, we all have those things that we just don't like to do and we put off doing, and that's mine.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let me ask you, let's say you were to move to Australia next week. And you had to start over from scratch. But you know what you know now. What would you do first to get things rolling?
Just in general?
Yeah, you want to get some cash coming in. You want to support yourself with your photography business somehow. What would you do to get work in?
Oh, in Australia? That sounds tricky. I would really work on the SEO. I would plug that a whole lot. I would get my local Australian friends to help me out and hook me up with some people that will let me shoot them and will be a good contact and then kind of grow from there.
Cool. Okay. How do you handle an unhappy client or a complaint if you've had one?
So I use a system that I learned from Brené Brown. It's called a shitty first draft. And so when someone complains to me, I write down my emotional response And that's my shitty first draft that no one should ever see. And then it's out of me, and then I can proceed like a grown up and deal with their issue. Complaints don't come along very often in either business, because I feel like when you are a really authentic person, people respond to that and people understand where you're coming from and are a little bit more empathetic and understanding.
If someone was unhappy with a shoot or a particular photo, you know, would you redo it or would you refund them?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it would probably depend on...
Never happened.
No. It would depend on the person. If they're a total pain in the butt, I would just refund them. If it was my problem, I would definitely do whatever I could, reshoot it, you know, offer them some discounted products, whatever they needed.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Have you ever had an embarrassing moment or a stuff up that you're happy to share?
Yes. Okay, so.
You sound like you're going to choose one from a list.
Well, I shoot naked men all the time. It's a very weird life that I live. Okay, so when I very first started shooting men, I had photographed a couple of men, and then I did a big art gallery, a nude art series of men and women. So before I shot the first man of the series, who was going to be totally naked in front of me, no sheets, nothing. It was just a nude art set on a backdrop. I was really nervous because I hadn't shot any nude men ever. And I've been married for like a million years. I haven't seen any nude men for a while. So I was pretty nervous about like how I would react and if I would do something real stupid and embarrass myself. So I decided that I was just going to Google naked men and get it out of my system. So I did that, which I do not recommend doing. Terrible. There's a lot of weird stuff out there. So I was just, you know, flipping through picture after picture of men naked and mostly just like grimacing because they were terrible. They were terrible. And my husband walks in the room to me, screen full of, you know, man bits. And he says, "So what you doing?" So I slammed the laptop closed and, "Oh, it's for work. I swear it's for work." I don't embarrass easily, but when my husband caught me Googling that.
That's awesome. How did you go at the shoot?
It went fine. I realized that if a naked person is in front of you and they drop the robe and you feel weird, you just can hide your face with the camera. Put it up there and be weird behind your giant camera. They won't know that you're being a total idiot back there.
I've got to ask you, do guys ever get aroused while you're photographing?
No. Like I said, it's not a sexy environment at all.
So never ever.
Yeah, that's kind of intentionally designed for that reason. So it's not sexy. I'm just a regular person. I am not a sexy person at all. Like, I'm not prancing around all trying to make them feel sexy. So it's not really a thing. I do always have an assistant with me just for safety because I am a woman shooting men. So I do have, you know, that safeguard in place.
A female assistant or a male?
A male. And I let the clients know ahead of time. And if they give me any resistance on that, I know that they are not my ideal client and I don't work with them.
I know we're going over time here, but is the assistant actually helping you or are they just in the room doing their own thing? They're retouching or something?
Usually they're just there. Sometimes they help. It depends on which assistant I get that day. If it's someone that knows what they're doing, they can help me. Someone that won't be weird and in the way, they can help. A lot of times they're just kind of a warm body that acts as a chaperone.
Okay, wow. Jen, this has been an absolute pleasure. And I've got to say thank you for sharing so much about both sides of your business. It's interesting. It's fascinating. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Dudoir side of the business grows. Sounds like the other one's already rocking along.
Thank you.
Where is the best place for people to check out your work?
Okay, so for photography, it's just jenswadinephotography.com. And then for my retouching, I'm just about to relaunch my website because it's a mess, but that is jengetsshitdone.com.
Fantastic. I'll add links to both those, and I have to apologize for totally butchering your surname. I had it right the first time, and then
I told you. It's a weird one.
Jen Swedin. That's right, isn't it? Swedin.
Swedin, yeah.
All right, I've got it. So I'll add links to those in the show notes and also links to your social media profile so people can find you and check out what you're doing and learn from you as well. So again, Jen, thank you so much.
Thank you. I do have an upcoming workshop.
Oh, yeah. Where? Where and when?
It's during WPPI, February 7th. It's an all-day workshop on shooting men. So posing, lighting, interaction, kind of the difference in how you communicate with men instead of women, and that sort of stuff.
So are you going to have nude men there?
We won't do nude.
Oh, see, that was going to be the best plug ever.
Yeah. No, that sounds like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Okay, are you going to be showing all the way you shoot and everything involved from start to finish?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, cool. Are you actually going to be doing retouching as well during that day?
We will touch on it because retouching men is quite a bit different than women. So we definitely will discuss that.
Fantastic. Awesome. Is there separate links to that particular workshop or do people just go to the WPPI website?
It's not through WPPI. It's separate. I'm just putting it on during WPPI.
There's a few things going on while WPPI is on.
Yes, I think that once you've gone to WPPI a few times, you don't really need to go. You just kind of go for fun and do your own learning outside of there, something specific.
Are you doing anything or do you know Jamie Pfister from Adore Girls?
I do, yes.
Okay, are you doing something in conjunction with her or is it separate?
No, but it's separate. We were going to be working together on another workshop series that's been postponed now. So our WPPI experiences are separate.
Okay, very cool. Wow, it's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, when I saw her on your site, I messaged her and was like, yeah!
Oh, she's awesome too. Look, like I said, Janet, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much. I'll add links to anything that you've talked about and mentioned in the show notes, including the upcoming workshop on February 7th in Vegas. So thanks again.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jen Swedin. Jen, if you're listening again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much about your business, how you're marketing yourself, how you're pricing, what's selling, what's not. You were just fantastic. Thank you so much again for sharing as much as what you did. It was a real pleasure to speak to you. For you, the listener, if you've got any follow-up questions for Jen, head over to photobizx.com/202. They'll take you to the show notes for today's episode. In those show notes, I've got examples of Jen's beautiful work. I've got links to anything and everything that she mentioned in the show. And at the very bottom, I've got a comments area where you can ask Jen any follow-up questions. If there's something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, hit her up there. I know that she'll be happy to come back and answer those. If you're a premium member, Jen will be part of the premium members Facebook group after this goes live, so you can have access to her there as well. Jen put together a promo code for PhotoBizX listeners for you. If you use the code PhotoBizX, you'll save $50 off when you go to register. There are more details about the workshop over at jenswedinphotography.com/workshops. I've got links to that in the show notes. She's going to take apart her business even further, and you can read about exactly what's covered in the workshop when you go and check out the page on Jen's website. So the promo code again is PhotoBizX, and that will save you $50 off when you register.
It's shout out time.
I've got three big shout outs for today's episode. The first one goes to Clark Scott. Clark, mate, thank you for taking the time to leave that review, mate. It's really appreciated. I appreciate the kind words, and I will take your word of advice or your suggestion as you make it in the review and try to remember that when I'm doing these interviews. My second big shout out goes to Filler Boy from Australia. Filler Boy, you've got to let me know who you are because I want to add a proper thank you and a link to your website or to your blog from the show notes to help you with your SEO. It's just a little way that I can say thanks for leaving your review, and you left an amazing review as well. I love that you say you're losing sleep listening to as many episodes as you can. It's really cool to read how much of a help the podcast has been to you. So Filler Boy, let me know who you are because I do want to say a proper thanks, like I said, and add those links to your website. Now, both those reviews were for the Photography Experiment podcast. If you aren't up to date with the Photography Experiment podcast, I recently interviewed Neil James. He is the master photographer or the brains behind the photo film. It's where he combines audio from the event that he's shooting, whether it's a wedding or a portrait session, with stills photography. And he puts together these beautifully heartwarming, touching, emotional photo films. So get back and have a listen to that episode if you haven't. It's on the Photography Experiment podcast feed. You can subscribe to it in iTunes, or you can find it on the photobizx.com website. But check out that interview with Neil James in the next week or so, because I've got a follow-up interview coming out on PhotoBizX in regard to his business model and how he's utilizing photo films to create more profits and more income for his photography business. My last shout out for today goes to Rob Branton. He's a Gold Coast and Brisbane wedding photographer and a longtime listener for the show. Rob, mate, thank you so much for taking the time as well and leaving that review that you did. I really do appreciate it. Unfortunately, I'm not going to catch up with you in Japan this year. You're there now as this podcast goes to air on a workshop with Martin Bailey, I believe, shooting in deep snow in the north of Japan, which just sounds and looks fantastic. Well, it looks bloody cold, to be honest with you. I'd rather be skiing than photographing, but I've seen some of the images that you're putting out, mate, and they are just fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing more. So again, mate, thanks for leaving that review. I do appreciate it, and I hope we can catch up in person at some stage, whether it's in Japan or Australia.
Want to know more about Andrew? Follow him on Instagram at Andrew_Helmich.
On the topic of catching up with you, I will be in Adelaide this week. I'm heading down there today. And we've organised a meetup at Cafe Amore. Actually, I think that's how you pronounce it. It might be Cafe Amore, but it's on Pulteney Street in Adelaide. And we're planning to meet up on Thursday, the 19th of January at 3 p.m. So if you can make it, try and be there if you can. I would love to meet you in person. It'd be great to share a coffee or a beer, a piece of cake, or even some dinner. I'm not sure how the afternoon is going to play out, but it's going to be very relaxed. We're going to just sit around, have a chat, talk business, talk holidays, talk whatever you want to talk about. But I really would love to put a face to a name and meet you in person if you can be there. Come for half an hour, come for 15 minutes, come for an hour, come for as long as you can stay. I would love to see you. That's the whole point of it. You can find links to the cafe in the show notes for today's episode, photobizx.com/202. And I've also got my phone number there if you want to give me a call in the afternoons. You might be a little bit late or can't get there till the evening. Whatever it is, get in touch, let me know, and I'd love to hang around and meet up and have a chat. Just one last thing before we close out today's episode. I recently came across a site that lists over 100 different photography niches, complete with links to successful photographers in each of those niches. And I've got a link to it in the show notes for today's episode. But it was interesting to look through that list and look at all the different types of photography niches out there. I mean, there are so many. And it just really drove home the fact that if you want to specialize in something, you can. You can. Just find out what it is and make that your niche. Go after it. I mean, there was one there for Tinder headshots. I couldn't believe it. And the site looks really cool. It looks like the guy has also got another business in play, and Tinder headshots is an offshoot of that. But it looks all very automated, the way he has things set up. And I couldn't believe that was a niche. It was something that I had never even considered or thought of. But it just goes to show there really is a niche out there for every single one of us if we're looking for something specific to do or to niche down in with our photography. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the show. I hope to see you in Adelaide if you're down there. Otherwise, have an awesome week, and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you've enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.